light. Some years ago, I worked as a hospice chaplain, and I was called to a home where a woman was about to die. She and her husband had been married for 67 years. 67 years. Her name was Ruby. And during those 67 years, they had never spent a night apart. Can you imagine that? 67 years of marriage. Well, she was about to die. She told her family that she was not afraid to die, but she was afraid of dying alone. So they called the family in, and they pulled in a hospital bed and put it in their bedroom so that she would feel more comfortable there. And the family agreed that they would take turns sitting up all night so that someone would be by her side all night long, so that she would never be alone. Well, her husband Roy went to bed, but you know, after sleeping for 67 years in the same bed with that woman, he could not sleep. So finally he got up and put his trousers on and grabbed his walker and walked over to where his son was sitting next to Ruby, and he said, "You go to bed. I can't sleep anyway. I'll sit here for a while." So the son got up, and Roy patted his wife on the hand and sat down next to her and turned on the television, started using the remote. And he said, "After a while, I felt impressed that I ought to turn the television off." So I did. And I stood up next to my wife, and I looked down at her. I reached down, and I took her hand and squeezed it. She opened her eyes. She smiled at me. She closed her eyes, and she died. He said, "Now, I felt guilty." I said, "Why guilty?" He said, "Well, after 67 years, there should have been something more. I should have done something or said something." I said, "Roy, 67 years ago when you started this marriage, where were you?" "What do you mean?" I said, "Where were you when the moment you began?" "Well, we were in a church." "And what were you doing, Roy?" "Well, we were standing in front of the preacher." "And what else were you doing, Roy?" "Well, we were holding hands." I said, "You were what?" "We were holding hands." "And 67 years later when she left, what were you doing?" "We were holding hands." I said, "She went out the same way she came in. Do you think she'd have it any other way?" He said, "I guess not." I said, "After 67 years, do you have any regrets?" And he thought for a moment, and he said, "Just one. I always thought we would have more time together." 67 years, his one regret, he didn't have more time with that woman. Isn't that the marriage you want? It's the marriage I want too.
67 years. Well, we want to find out how long the folks here tonight have been married. Maybe we have some 67 years. But let's start with the newlyweds. Anybody that is less than a year? I know we have one. There we go.
How long for you guys?
Five weeks.
My goodness. It's still honeymoon.
Cool.
Wow, I think they're going to win on that one. Anybody
now, wait
less
a minute.
Than
where's,
5 weeks?
Where's Dottie? Are they back there?
All right.
I know that.
They're newlyweds too.
Coming in the door. I want you to see who the newlyweds are coming in the door. Are they looking out?
Yeah,
they're not coming in.
No, she's not coming in. You mentioned her name. She's staying out.
Yeah, she doesn't want to.
Not going to make the grand entrance.
All right. Anybody else less than a year? Okay, let's move up. There we go. Newlyweds.
There we go. There's Dottie. All right. How about 1 to 5 years? How many fit in that category? Over here.
Right here.
And back here.
All right. Just
good.
All right. Just getting started. How many for you guys?
Four and a half.
So you're right under that mark. How about you guys?
Four and a half.
All right. And you said a while ago 3.5.
3.5. Okay.
All right. How about in the 5 to 10 range?
Okay, over here,
there,
5 to 10 and 5 to 10.
Right there. Anybody else?
Good.
All right, now we're getting into the experienced people now, right?
Yeah.
How about the 10 to 20?
10 to 20. Oh,
man.
A lot of you there, 10 to 20. Look at that.
Okay, either they know all about it or they're like trying to figure it out. So they all showed up here tonight. 20 to 30.
Oh, yeah, look
good.
At that.
Lots,
good.
Yeah, lots of folks.
Good.
And how about the 30 to 40 group? That's us.
We're in that group. Okay,
yeah.
Right over here.
How long for you guys?
35
All
is
right.
Good for you. Congratulations.
Very good. Yay.
Way
and
to go.
Back here, there was somebody.
34 in May.
34. All right.
We
so
were
we're right there with
December.
You. 34
in
December. Yeah. Let's see. Where are we? 40 to
40 to
50?
40 to 50, anyone? Okay, over here. You guys
Wonderful.
Want to teach?
Here. These are the experienced people.
Notice this, 40 to 50 years, and they're still here. That tells you something, doesn't
that's
it?
That's a good thing.
They came tonight. That tells you something. That's
so
good.
So, you know, all the 1 to 5 people in the newlyweds, just take note. Still need to keep coming. Anybody 50 and above?
More than 50?
No? Okay, so who is our longest?
So how long for you guys? 42 and back here? 42. We got a tie.
All right, got a tie.
All right.
Yay.
Congratulations, everyone.
You know, marriage was God's idea. And it was his ideal, too. He had a plan. He had it set out from the beginning. And he's never wavered from that plan. And the plan is that two will become one. We're going to talk a lot about oneness tonight. But, you know, when Jesus was here on this earth, some of his detractors came to him. And they said, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any and every reason? Jesus' answer was interesting because he didn't answer that directly. He said, let's not talk about what you can get by with or what's legal, you know, what can I do and still be okay. He said, let's go back and look at the very beginning. What was God's plan and what was the ideal? And so he takes them clear back to Genesis and he says, for the two shall become one. But the question is,
which one? Now, by the way, if you have your folder, please reach in there and take out the sheets that are entitled Introduction. You can follow along with those. You might want to fill in the blanks there or maybe take some notes as we go along.
Those are optional. If you want to take notes, you can. If you don't want to, if you'd rather listen,
there will not be
okay.
A quiz later.
No.
There's not going to be a test before you can get out of here.
You don't have to turn them in or anything.
But if you would like to follow along and take some notes for a future reference, you can certainly do this. This mystery of oneness is a mystery for all of us because somehow you're supposed to put me together with you, and somehow that's going to equal an us. And so, again, the question is, two become one, but which one? Do we somehow assimilate to where I lose myself, or is there an accommodation? Assimilation versus accommodation. And I believe that God's idea is more accommodation.
So what is God talking about when he says you'll be one? What does it mean to be one? You know, I think, if anything, all of us are looking for someone to share our lives. Oneness is another word for intimacy,
yes.
Really. And intimacy is every part of our lives. There is spiritual intimacy, where we're pursuing God together. When you think about that, don't you want someone alongside you where you're pursuing God together? You're on the same path. My dad used to talk about what a blessing it was to see eye to eye. And that's what he was talking about, that we saw things eye to eye in God's way. There's emotional oneness, where your hearts are together. You know, we're all looking for a soulmate, right? And I think it's less finding who that person is out there, like searching for a needle in a haystack, than it is learning to be intimate with the person that you have.
Right.
And having that soul connection there. It's intellectual. And here we're talking about mental exercise and gaining knowledge and finding out about the world around you and understanding events going on and sharing those things together. Physical oneness, the sexual side, the sensual side of marriage, so very important. And when you put all of those together, you have this miracle that God gives us of being one, of having the intimacy that he desires for us.
And by the way, these four types of oneness, you don't choose, oh, we'll take two of the four, thank you very much, or three of the four. All four are necessary in order for you to experience genuine oneness. All four must be present in a marriage for it to have genuine oneness, true intimacy. All four sides.
And marriage is more than just living in the same house. Sharing property, having, you know, a legally binding agreement and having a bunch of kids running around. Marriage has to do with truly feeling like you are with a person that you are one with,
right.
That your hearts are together. Like I said, it's a tremendous miracle.
So what does oneness feel like? For me, a part of oneness is knowing how to order for her in a restaurant. If she's gone to the bathroom first and the waiter comes, I can pretty well order for her. I know about what she's going to get.
Oneness is that inside joke. You know, the thing that you two laugh at, but nobody else in the world would? That's oneness.
That's oneness. Oneness is knowing that your secrets are safe, that she's not going to tell anyone, you're not going to tell anyone, your secrets are safe.
Oneness is, for me, oneness is cold feet. See, I have the coldest feet in the world.
Amen.
And it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the middle of summer, my feet are always cold. And we have this agreement that every night I can put my cold feet on him when we get in bed and warm him up.
I made that agreement before we got married. I had no idea how cold those things were. But 34 years, I've honored that commitment. And I'm just drifting off to sleep and those feet hit me and, whoa, man, am I awake now? And it can be the middle of August in Texas, 105 outside, and those feet are cold. I don't understand.
Well, it's because of the air conditioner.
You
crank the air conditioner, right, ladies? Crank the air conditioner down, you're cold anyway.
But oneness is also worshiping together. It's sharing a spiritual journey together.
Oneness is sharing the journey of life. You know, the births, the deaths, the moves, the jobs, the job losses, all of those things that go into making life. And we want to have a partner in that. We want to have a witness to our lives. And that's what God planned when he gave us marriage.
That's right. So if we all want oneness, why don't we just have it? I mean, it's what everyone wants, so why don't you just have it? Well, the truth is that there are barriers to oneness. There are things that keep us from being one together. And one of those barriers is simply sin and selfishness. And maybe you could say that by definition, sin is selfishness. Is put what I want over what God wants, is what I want instead of what my spouse or my family wants. Sin is selfishness, a me-first attitude. And that's one of the barriers to the oneness that we all crave.
Another barrier is self-protection and fear of rejection.
Yeah.
I'm going to protect myself. You know, I think it started clear back with Adam and Eve. As soon as they ate the fruit, the first thing they started to do was to cover themselves, right? They covered themselves in the areas of their differences, in the areas of intimacy, because they needed to put a wall up now, this barrier between them, because, you know, you might hurt me. Mm-hmm. You know, you've hurt me before, and you might hurt me again, and so I'm going to just keep my distance from you.
I don't want to be hurt. That's the last thing on earth I want, so I'm going to protect myself.
And I learned quickly, you know, you hurt me once, I'll put the barrier up. Or it might be that, you know, if you really knew who I was, you wouldn't love me. If you really knew what was going on inside here, you wouldn't love me, so I'm going to just keep the little wall there just so you don't get too close.
Yeah.
And those things cause us to have barriers. We need to be able to have openness and honesty.
But another barrier to oneness is simply a lack of knowledge. I mean, who tells you how to be married? How do you get this information? And even if you have some premarital counseling, you know, that helps. But it's not the real thing. You don't really figure this out until you get married and you start to live together. And then you realize, man, this can be hard work. And if you don't have the knowledge, well, then you can really be in trouble. And where do we learn about marriage usually? It's from our home of origin. And if your family of origin was dysfunctional, or if that marriage fell apart through divorce, or you grew up in a single-parent family, you've got a lack of knowledge here. And that becomes a barrier to oneness.
Negative issues are also a barrier. It's hard for us to be together and close and on the same page when we have big negative issues in our lives. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk a lot about. Tonight especially, a little bit tomorrow afternoon, are some of the negative issues that keep us apart. The things that are wounds from the past, or the dysfunctional things that may be going on currently, and we try to put all kinds of good stuff in, and it doesn't seem to work, because the negative things put the barrier between us.
And that's why sometimes when you go to a marriage seminar and they tell you all these nice things to do, it doesn't help. Because the nice things seem disingenuous if the negative things are still there. It's important to remove the negative before the nice things, the positive things, really have an effect. In other words, if indeed I send you roses, but I'm still screaming at you, the roses don't mean quite as much, do they?
No.
They don't mean as much.
Just don't scream, right?
Just don't scream, and you can save the money on the roses.
No. Now, was that right? Did that work?
No, it didn't
no,
work.
No, no.
But still, the roses with the screaming don't work either. And so, I mean, if you've got to choose between the two, certainly that
Absolutely.
Would be the better choice. So why mad about marriage? When we were looking at a title for some shows that we wanted to do on Lifestyle Magazine, we were thinking about the sad state of affairs that marriage finds itself in today. We wanted to do a series of within Lifestyle Magazine. Lifestyle Magazine is the flagship program of Faith for Today Television. And it is one of the most widely recognized Seventh-day Adventist productions on television, Lifestyle Magazine. It is a Christian talk show, is basically what it is. We talk to people with a story. We talk to people who are authors and experts. We decided that we wanted to do a series of shows specifically on marriage, because the sad state of affairs here, and as we were thinking about a title, we thought, you know, some people are just madly in love, but then there are other people who are just plain mad. We'd like to help people flip that switch from just plain mad to madly in love. So we came up with the title, Mad About Marriage, and that could be taken either way. In fact, when we first decided on the title, I posted it on my Facebook page, and immediately I started to get reactions. The first reaction was, mad about marriage? You bet I'm mad. She just left me and she's filing for divorce. I'm mad as hops. The next comment was, mad about marriage? Well, if you mean madly in love, then yes, because I'm madly in love with my spouse. A few days later, I got another post that said, mad about marriage. I'm glad there's finally a seminar for this. I'm still trying to figure out who talked me into this thing. But just today, I got one more post on this. And it was, mad about marriage? You bet we're mad, because today we are celebrating our 64th wedding anniversary, and we are madly in love. That's pretty cool, isn't it?
64 years. Well, we said we're going to talk about some of those big issues, because often in marriage seminars, we come and we hear about the good things, and they are good. They are good principles, but we don't talk about what's blocking that?
Right.
What's in the way?
We've got to clean out those wells. We've got to, you know, get the pus out of the wound so it can heal. Does that make sense?
So
get the infection out.
Take a look. We're just going to kind of run through some of the things. There we go.
Oh, look at
we're
that.
Just
I fell behind, didn't
You're
I?
Behind.
Okay, there we go. Here we go.
The big issues. Negative communication. That's a huge issue. Forgiveness or the lack thereof. Lack of spirituality. Too little sexual intimacy. Those are big issues. We also want to talk about infidelity, abuse, addiction, and pornography, negative past, and anger. We're going to touch on all of those, but you know, those negative issues exist in many, many marriages, but there are so many others. Whatever it happens to be for you, you need to take a look and say, what are the negative things? Finances aren't up there.
Oh, yeah.
That's one of the big things. What about chronic illness? You have chronic illness. There are so many that we can talk about, and we will throughout this weekend.
Grief issues, the loss of a loved one, the loss of a child. You realize that the divorce rate for couples who lose a child in marriage, the divorce rate for the next 18 months is 50 to 70%, and over 5 years is 95%. So it's huge. It is huge. Those are negative issues that you can add all the niceties you want to this thing, but if the negative exists, the nice is not going to help. We've got to clean out the wells to get the negative out so that the nice things can then make a difference in our marriage.
So what we want to do right now that we've kind of given you an overview of what we're about this weekend, we want to take a few moments to give you some time to start off together in what's going to happen throughout the weekend. I know that some people, when they're here, they have been dragged here. And we understand that. In fact, you know, you can look out in the parking lot and you kind of see the heel marks where someone dragged you in. But you know what? You're here. So as long as you're here, we want to invite you and ask you to give it your all.
Just give it your best.
Open your heart. Give it your all. So for the next few moments, we want you to do a few of these little exercises here that you find on page 3 in your note. No, in page 2 in your notes. One is we want you to take a few minutes to pray individually about your own openness to eliminating whatever barriers happen to be in your marriage. And, you know, all of us have things ranging from very small to very large.
Yeah.
But are you open to taking a look and saying, is there something maybe I'm not even aware of? So pray about your own openness to being willing to eliminate any barriers that exist between you and your spouse.
And then it's going to be important to try to identify the areas where the two of you enjoy oneness and intimacy in your marriage, as well as some of the areas where you don't enjoy this. Maybe you've got some barriers. So let's identify some of those things, those issues that make your marriage together a little more difficult.
And maybe just make that kind of a quick list, quick hits, you know, nothing real long, because we're just going to take a few minutes here. And then identify one meaningful thing that your spouse could do that would let you know that they're committed to your marriage. All right? So we're going to give you just a few minutes here, have some music playing, so you can first pray, and then Mike will kind of move you on into the second part of the exercises. All right? I think most of you have probably moved into the second part, but if not, go ahead and move into just discussing what areas are strong for you and what areas you wish you could move forward a little bit.
I hope you've had the opportunity to at least talk a little bit about some of the areas where maybe you've got a roadblock in the relationship and some of those areas where you're finding some strength as well, and that you have prayed that the Lord will make you open to understanding what that is for your marriage, discussing that so that you can remove those negative barriers and we can move on with something positive.
We want to talk a little bit about one of the negative parts, and as we said, we want to start really with the negative, and sometimes people say, well, why do we want to talk about negative stuff? Why don't we just talk about the positive? And Mike has talked a little bit about that. But right now we want to deal with communication issues as a negative. You know, everything that I know about Mike, I know because he has communicated it to me in one way or another, right? Either verbally, by the words he has said, or by body language, or by tone of voice, or by his actions, whatever it happens to be, he has communicated it to me. So communication is everything. Communication is key in our marriages. And if our communication is negative, what is that going to do to us? Well, we want to share some information that came from the University of Denver in a 20-year study that they did. They said, you know, marriages are doing so poorly in America, you know, 40 to 50% divorce rate. We're really not doing well. So if we studied marriage over a long period of time and we looked at what makes marriages work, then maybe we could take that information and we could begin to teach that to people across the country and hopefully help marriages succeed a little bit better. Makes sense, right? So they did the 20-year study. But it was very interesting what happened, because when they studied marriage and they found the marriages that lasted and succeeded, they all looked different. And they couldn't say, if you do this, you'll succeed. They couldn't isolate certain things that said, this will help you succeed. But what they did find was that in marriages that failed or were unhappy, ending in divorce or just an unhappy marriage, there were very strong common denominators. And those common denominators were all negative communication patterns. Basically, they discovered that negative communication patterns, these patterns that we're going to present to you, are the strongest predictor for divorce that exists in the research today. Now, you think, well, why do I want to talk about that, though? Well, another reason, if it's a predictor for divorce, that's a strong enough reason, right? But another reason is because when our children see those patterns in our homes, they tend to pick them up and to carry them on. And that was showed up in the research as well, that the children that saw these negative communication patterns learned them and they perpetuated them in their marriages, and they found that those marriages failed as well. So if we know that these communication patterns are predictors for divorce, we know that our children can learn them and take them on, then if we continue to have them in our homes, are we predisposing our children to divorce or to failed marriage? It sounds like we are. And that's the last thing that most of us want to do, is to predispose our children to failed marriages. So it's worth taking a look, right?
Yeah, also, they found that eliminating one of these negative patterns does more to ensure the long-term stability of your marriage than adding five positive things. Now, that's powerful. If you can take one of these negative communication patterns out of your marriage, you do more to ensure the long-term stability of that marriage than adding five positives. So that makes it a very powerful indicator, doesn't
it? Yeah. And sometimes we think, well, you know, we do okay. We communicate. We're all right. Well, I want you to be open to taking a look at these patterns, because what we discovered is, to some degree or another, we all tend to do all of these because they're very human things to do.
That's right.
So
let's talk about them. The first pattern is called escalation. Escalation occurs when one person says something pretty negative. An argument starts with something small, a small issue, and then the other person responds with something a little more negative. So in other words, I've said something negative. My wife responds with something that just ups the ante a little bit. And so I come back with something that ups the ante more. And we keep going like this, where it escalates sometimes in negativity, sometimes in intensity, sometimes in volume. And it can end up with something that started as simple as my leaving my socks on the floor, ending up with I'm leaving you. You know, you wonder, how did socks end up with leaving me? How did it get from point A to point B? Well, that's escalation, and sometimes it happens rather quickly. It might look something like this. So here's a little video clip to show you how this would look.
Put it in the dishwasher.
Ouch. You ever seen anything like that? I'm not going to ask for a show of hands for how many have done that. We're not going to embarrass anybody that way. But maybe you've seen something like that. Maybe in your home of origin. Maybe your parents did that. Or maybe, pray tell, you've done it from time to time, where an argument started over something small and then built to something big.
You know, it's like, oh, you're going to hurt me? Well, watch this. I'll hurt you more. Yeah. Well, watch this. And it just keeps going and going. And the interesting thing is sometimes it's loud like that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not loud at all. You can escalate just by one hurtful remark and then another hurtful remark.
With a very calm voice.
Yeah, very calm.
Cold and calculating, you see.
But what's the damage?
The damage is that this, first of all, it inflicts deep, lasting wounds. Now, people say, what you said when you were emotional, so you must really mean it. The truth is, the research shows that we usually don't mean it. We just say it when we're angry to hurt. But it doesn't matter whether you meant it or not. It still hurts, and it leaves the wound. It leaves the scar.
And it shuts down true communication. You know, their problem here is probably not so much about where the dishes are.
No.
Their problem is something else, and they're not talking about that. Otherwise, dishes in the sink wouldn't end up with, I'm leaving you, right?
Yeah.
There's always an underlying issue, and when we escalate, it keeps us from actually talking about what the real problem is.
And that just simply leaves the problem unsolved. If you're not talking about it, you're not talking about the real problem, not just the dishes in the sink, but the real problem, then the problem never really gets solved, does it? And it also just simply destroys closeness and emotional intimacy. There is no intimacy there because there's no safety there. You've hurt each other. You've wounded one another. So there's not going to be that safety or that intimacy there as long as you're escalating. So if that's the case, if this is all the damage, surely there's got to be a way out of this. And the good news is that there's a way out of all the four negative communication patterns, because all of these patterns are what we call dynamic factors. Now, there are factors that influence your marriage. Some of them are static. Some, you know, you can't help whether or not your parents got a divorce, but that actually plays a part in whether or not you'll get a divorce. People who come from a home where divorce occurred are more likely to get a divorce. You're not locked into it, but you're more likely. That's a static factor. You can't do anything about that. But dynamic factors are things you can change, and all of these most powerful indicators are things that you can change, these four negative communication patterns. So there's got to be a solution. The first of all is to discuss with your spouse and just acknowledge, hey, we do this. We escalate. In fact, we at a seminar we did at a church recently, we asked the church secretary, we had had some boxes we needed them to send by UPS to the next church. And so we had the labels, we put the labels on it, and the secretary is willing to send it. So she sent it. She sent us an email saying, I sent your boxes today. Oh, by the way, Sunday after the seminar, my husband and I got into an argument. Surprise, surprise. And I started off, and he stopped me and said, that's escalation. Made me angry, but he was right. At least now we have something to call it. So anyway, it's important that you acknowledge, we do this. This is our pattern. We don't want to do this anymore.
Successful couples, Successful couples exit from this pattern within the first 1 to 3 minutes. They exit quickly. They recognize it. Now, that's what makes it important to talk about it beforehand and to acknowledge the fact that, you know what, this does exist. And if you talk about it beforehand, you can come up with maybe a cue, a verbal cue or some kind of cue that will help you to be able to exit it. Now, you know, if we start into this and Mike says, that's escalation.
Yeah. That,
or
what's that going to do to you?
Yeah. It's probably going to make me more mad, right? Because it's like, oh, he's calling me out over that marriage seminar we went to.
Yeah. You know? Now you got this knowledge. Well, big deal.
But if we have agreed, okay, even though I'm mad at the moment, but we've agreed that when we hear the cue, whatever it happens to be, we are going to back up from this because we want our marriage to be better. We want our marriage to be safer. Then I can say, okay, that doesn't mean I'm happy. It doesn't mean I agree with you.
No.
But it does mean that I'm going to back off and say, okay, we'll talk about this a little bit later.
And by the way, that is the next part of this. Once you've given the cue and you both back off, then you set an appointment to deal with the issue at a later time. We're going to talk to you about how to do that later. But you set an appointment to deal with the issue at a later time. And that's important that you learn at that point how to solve the problem. But set the appointment, and then, of course, keep the appointment once you've set it, all right?
That allows you, you know that the issue is not going to still be there. I mean,
yeah.
You know that you don't have to deal with it now in this angry fashion, but you will come back to it.
Yeah.
So it gives you a little bit of safety in that regard as well.
And, of course, it won't help to set the appointment if you don't learn some skills for problem solving, and we're going to help you with that as well. Tomorrow we'll give you some good skills for solving problems. And if you make a commitment to learning and using those skills, then you can deal with the issue without escalating and hurting each other. So that's escalation.
Basically, it's saying, I'm going to make this a safe place.
Yeah.
I'm going to make our home a safe place, whatever it takes. I'm going to do it. That's the commitment that it takes. The second pattern that we want to talk about is called invalidation. Now, invalidation is a pattern where one spouse either subtly or directly puts down the other person. They put down their thoughts, their character, their feelings. This is a difficult one because it has such a wide range and it can look so many different ways. When it can be either very subtle,
yeah,
and maybe even unintentional, or it can be very direct and very angry, you know, resulting in even name-calling and all kinds of things like that. We want to show you one example of what it might look like that's a little bit more on the direct path.
And I think this is a little bit soft right at first.
Just too stupid to live, right? If you knew you were speeding. People that don't speed don't get tickets. What's wrong with you? It's fairly overt, right? There is something wrong with you. You are the problem, and you knew what you were doing. Do you hear that kind of parent voice there, wagging the finger, saying, "What's
scolding.
Yeah, I have to tell you. I have to fix you." Parenting is for children, right?
Parenting is children. Basically, you can speak to each other in a parent voice and a child voice. The parent voice is scolding, like she was to him. The child voice may be something more like, I want what I want when I want it, so leave me alone. I'll do what I want to do regardless of you. That's a child speaking, right? It's a selfish child, but the parent says, I can't believe that you would do this. How stupid is this? I mean, it looks like you'd grow up someday. That's a parent voice. Well, truthfully, you don't want to be married to your mom, do you? Or to your dad. You don't want to be living with a parent. Instead, we need to learn to talk to each other with adult voices, and that means the voice of respect. We learn to talk to each other with a voice of respect instead of the scolding voice of the parent.
That's right. And, it can deteriorate to even name-calling. You are so stupid. What a jerk you are. You heard that in the earlier one.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're just like your mother. You're just like your dad.
Yeah.
Oh, sometimes fighting words, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to hear that. So it can be very overt and very, very hurtful. But it can also be more subtle. There can be times when maybe we think we're helping, we think we're smoothing things over, but that's not how it's interpreted.
It may look
Watch
like
this.
You
may have to turn it up loud.
Oh, let's say, yeah, I forgot. There we go. Here we go.
And I'm trying so hard. I'm getting frustrated and discouraged.
Oops.
Did that help? Ladies, did that help? Not so much.
He was trying to help. He was engaging in guy talk. You know that, don't you? That's guy talk. That's guy talk. You know, you go to your buddy with a friend with a problem. You go to your friend with a problem. You say, here's my problem. He says, oh, don't worry. It's no big deal. I mean, you know, by the way, I don't even care about that. Well, you know, you feel pretty good about that if your buddy says that to you. Man, he listened to me. He had a solution. You go home and try that on your wife, and you're in trouble, dude. Because she will say to you, you never listen to me. You never listen to me.
She was looking for empathy. And what she got was, you know, she interpreted it as either you don't care, or you don't get it, or you're just tired of hearing it. You know, you've heard me say this so many times, and you're
so silly. Why do you bring it up again?
I'm tired of it. I'm sick of it.
That's what she's thinking. Yeah.
Well, she was looking for empathy, and she got what she interpreted as an insult. It was an invalidating statement. Mm-hmm. Invalidation basically says, I don't respect you. I don't hear you. Whatever you're saying is kind of going over my head, yeah, or in one ear and out the other, and it doesn't matter. Invalidation is tough because it can show up in other ways as well. Sometimes something that sometimes when you expect to have praise and instead you get criticism. We knew this couple. They were engaged to be married, not married yet. They were living in separate states. And they were, you know, because of their work, they were separated. And she was going to go visit him. And he was all excited. She was all excited. They were, and she lived in Texas? I think he was in Florida. One thing he knew about her is that she loved neatness. She loved everything to be neat and perfect and in its place.
And he was a slob.
Oh, yeah. You know, he's living in an apartment by himself. So he knows she's coming, so he spends 2 weeks getting his apartment all clean. You know, he cleans the bathroom, he cleans everything, gets it all nice. He's excited. She's going to be proud of me. And she arrives. She walks in the door. She looks around. She says, oh, nice apartment. You never could keep bookcases straight, could you? First thing, he's expecting praise, and he didn't forget that, you know. he brought it up later because for him, it was you're picking on the one thing that's wrong instead of the many things that are right. It's so easy for us to do that.
And doing that, it basically tears down your self-esteem.
It does.
When someone does that to you, you feel worse about yourself. You feel like you're a nothing, a nobody, a loser, because invalidation does that for you.
You can invalidate by interrupting.
Yeah.
Talking over the other person. You know, you can tell the story better. Let's say Mike and I go out to eat with a couple.
Yeah.
And we're sitting there at the table, and I start to tell a story. I said, you know, you wouldn't believe what happened. Last week, we went to the mall.
It was week before last.
We went to the mall.
It was the new mall. The new mall. You know where that is.
We were at the new mall. And we parked, and we're walking in through the parking lot, and this guy comes up to us.
Oh, he was enormous. He was like 6'5". He weighed about 400
really
pounds.
Big,
he was huge. I mean, the guy was incredible. And the guy was... He was dressed like a slob, and
eventually she just stops, right? She gives up. We can invalidate in many different ways. It's easy to invalidate by not paying attention. We can do this with our children. If you never look them in the eye, you never stop what you're doing and turn to them and look and listen and hear what's going on with them, they are invalidated. Now, I know, moms, if you've got little ones running around, you can't stop every single time they say, mommy, mommy, mommy,
mommy, mommy, mommy,
because they do it all day long, right? But there have to be those times when you stop, you look them in the eye, you listen to what they're saying, and you hear what's going on in their little hearts. It's very important to validate rather than invalidate. Validating says, you are important to me. I value you as a person, as a child of God, as a gift to me.
So a part of the damage that this does is, again, it tears down the self-esteem. It also makes you unsafe for your spouse. If indeed you are the person who does the invalidation, you are unsafe now, and then they feel very vulnerable. Well, there's got to be a solution to this, again, because we can't just leave it here. We got to fix this thing, don't we? And eventually this thing will work. Mm-hmm. Oh, it was working until just a second ago, wasn't it, here, guys? There we go. Okay. All right, here we go. The solution is validate your spouse. You solve invalidation by validation, and you validate by showing respect. And one of the best ways to show validation for your spouse is simply to listen. To listen to the words and the emotions. More than just the words, but the emotions behind the words. It's important to listen. Now, guys, this is sometimes difficult for us to do. And ladies, you could pay us a favor here by picking the right time to talk. Fourth quarter of the Super Bowl, not a good idea to bring up an issue, you know? That's not the time. And so it's important that you find the time. But when they do talk, guys, when those lips are moving, it means that they're saying something, and it usually is something important. And here's how you respond. You turn off the TV, you turn off the radio, you put down the newspaper, you look and you make eye contact with her. You sit in an open position, so you're not less like this, you know, with your back to her. You actually turn and you look with her in an open position, so you communicate, I'm receiving what you're saying. And there's another way to do this, and this is very tricky. Now listen, when she's talking, you do this at the appropriate time. You say, uh-huh. Tough, isn't it? That's listening 101, all right? Repeat after me, guys. Uh-huh. Good. Hey, you guys are good. Then if you want to go to advanced listening, at the appropriate time, you learn to say, what happened next? Now, I know that she takes a long time to tell a story. She takes 3 pages to tell a story you can tell in 2 sentences. I know that's true. But she's doing that for a reason, because she bonds through shared emotion. And if she can paint this scenario so that you can empathize with her and identify with the emotion, she feels closer to you. That makes sense? Now, that's why at the appropriate time, if you want to go to really advanced listening, you learn at the appropriate time to say, sweetheart, how did that make you feel? Yeah. And after she faints and you resuscitate her... Show a genuine interest. So you fix invalidation by validating, and the best way to do that is actually by listening.
And you know, ladies, one of the best ways that we can validate is by turning off the little nagging button that we tend to have, or the fixing button that we tend to have. You know, I know he can't do it, so I've got to tell him how. I have to fix him, or I have to keep telling him over and over to do the thing I want him to do. We need to turn that off, because that's invalidating. And instead of drawing him closer to you, it's going to put that wall up and push him further and further and further away.
That's right.
So we need to validate by...
Showing the respect that your spouse deserves.
But also by realizing that this person is a person that God gave us. This person is a child of God. He or she is a gift to you. And when we start to see our spouse that way, it makes all the difference. You know, we want to build them up because, wow, this is my gift. This is the person that God has put me with.
What a treasure.
And they're going to live up to being the person that we tell them that they are. So it's important. Choose to be their protector. Choose to make your home, once again, a safe place. And you'll hear that a lot this weekend. There ought to be one safe place on earth. You're probably not going to find it out there somewhere. You may not find it at work. You may not even find it at church at times. But you ought to be able to find it when you walk through your own doors into your own home.
So far, we've got 2 negative patterns of communication. One is called escalation and the other invalidation. Are you ready for number 3? Number 3 is simply called negative interpretations. Now, negative interpretations occurs when one partner interprets what the other partner says or does more negatively than it was intended. Now, in order to do this, you have to do a fair amount of mind reading. Yes, I heard you say this, but what you really meant was...
Yeah, but I know you.
Yeah.
I know what you're thinking.
You don't know me that well.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Okay. But truthfully, you cannot read your partner's mind. I know some of you think you can, but you cannot. You cannot read that partner's mind. And negative interpretations assumes you read the mind, but you always read it negatively. When you read the mind negatively, it is very destructive. And that might look something like this. How does he win that? He's in so deep now. How is he going to get out of that? There's no way to win that thing, is there? He can't win. If there's much of this going on in your relationship at all, it becomes very, very, very destructive. And it does a lot of damage. By the way, all the video clips you've seen tonight, the intro video clip you saw with us building Mad About Marriage, and all these will be appearing in Lifestyle Magazine shows that will be airing beginning the second week in May on Trinity Broadcasting as well as on the Hope Channel. And so we just, you know, it's a kind of a little way to illustrate some of these basic points as we go through them. But if there's much of this going on in the relationship at all, it really becomes very, very destructive. And the damage that this does is, first of all, the speaker, the person who said this thing in the first place, they're trapped. There's no way out. There's nothing that he can do to turn this thing around because she's going to interpret it negatively regardless of what he says. She's going to, yeah, you said this, but what you really mean, there's no way out for this guy. For anyone who is the victim of negative interpretations, you cannot win. And again, as we mentioned, it involves negative mind reading. And if there's much of that going on, it really becomes destructive. The tendency is none of us tend to mind read positively, do we? If we would, it would help our marriages. But mind reading negatively is very difficult and very destructive. And it also passes an unfair judgment.
It does. And the other thing it does is it kills the desire to communicate. You know, if everything I say is going to be interpreted badly, then I might as well just not say anything, right? And it can also actually elicit the negative behavior out of the person that you're accusing them of. In other words, they say, well, if I'm going to be accused of it anyway, I might as well do it. And that's a childish response, but it's a very common one. And we tend to do it. Well, as I'm going to get accused, I might as well go ahead. And we act like children in that regard in our response to this.
That's right. So how do we fix this? The only person who can fix this is the person who's doing the negative mind reading, the negative interpretation. They can simply choose to interpret things more positively. They're the only person who can fix this. They have to basically choose to take the spouse at their word. In other words, when he says, I really just wanted to help with Thanksgiving cooking, that's all it was. It wasn't that he hated the yams. He loves your candied yams. You have to assume that your spouse is speaking honestly and that they don't have a hidden agenda.
But what makes that work? What makes that work is if both of you actually do commit to honesty. When you get a track record of honesty with each other, then it's much easier for you to believe what the person says. If he tells me the truth all the time, then he's telling me the truth now, and I'm going to choose to believe it. Even if I think, oh, I'm not so sure about that, I'm going to make the choice to believe it because we've created an atmosphere of honesty within our home.
And so if you do choose to mind read positively rather than negatively. You're not going to hurt the marriage by mind reading positively.
And assume the very best about your spouse. You know, what can it hurt to assume the best about them?
That's right.
Instead of assuming the worst about the person that you love, assume the best about them. That will make it, you know, that will make it work.
Early in our marriage, I did some negative interpretation in our relationship. In fact, I remember one day Gail did something which hurt me, and I told her about it, and she apologized. And I told her about it again, and she apologized again, and I told her about it again. She apologized. About the fourth time through, she said, "You act as though I did this on purpose." Now, you have to understand that we grew up in very different places. Any of you old enough to remember the old sitcom Father Knows Best? This rather idyllic family situation where father was the font of all wisdom and the children and mom all adored dad, and dad really could fix the problem if they just come to him and he would have these words of wisdom. That's where she grew up. That was her home, only it was better because they had God there. It was a religious family where they just simply adored the godly man who was their father. That's where she grew up. I grew up, on the other hand, in The Simpsons. We put the fun back in dysfunctional, I'm telling you. So in my family, when Gail said, you know, you act as though I did this on purpose, you have to understand that in my family, that could be. Someone might have done it on purpose to hurt me. And so when she said, you act as though I did this on purpose, my response was, yeah. And then she said something which I think, began to change our marriage. It gave us a mantra for our marriage. And her basic response was, I will never intentionally hurt you. Now, she says, I may do it accidentally. I may go brain dead. I may do something that I don't realize will hurt you, but you can bank on this. It will never be intentional. And so we've made that our mantra for our marriage. And in 34 years of marriage, I can promise you, she has never once hurt me on purpose. Now, she's done it, you know, like all of us. She's made a mistake. She's gone brain dead or whatever. But she's never hurt me on purpose. I mean, we all do, yeah. Don't we?
Brain dead fairly often, actually.
Yeah, well, it happens.
You know, that works when both of you make that decision ahead of time, that I will never intentionally hurt my spouse. Then I know that I can trust him. Mike does not intentionally hurt me either. It has been just a thing, like he said, that has just opened up new light to us. When we realize that I would never intentionally hurt, what it does is it gives you this freedom that if Mike does something to me that hurts me, I can now back up and say, all right, I know he's not intentionally trying to hurt me, so what is it? What is going on here? And I can step back and say, what's going on with him or what's going on with me? What is the real problem here? Because I know it's not an intentional hurt.
I can simply ask the question.
Yeah.
I can say, you know, sweetheart, I know you wouldn't hurt me on purpose. What you just did made me feel uncomfortable. It felt like this, so could you tell me what you intended by that? And then she can answer, and I'll take her at her word for it.
You can simply ask, what's going on here? Because that is really hurtful. It's a freedom, but it comes about because you both make the decision. Now, you and I both know that you can say things that you know will push their buttons, because you know what those buttons are, right? And then you can back up and say, oh, no, honey, that's not what I... No, I didn't mean that. But you know in your heart you did. So you have to make that decision ahead of time that I'm not going to push those buttons. I know what they are, but I'm going to protect my spouse rather than try to hurt them.
Yeah, and that's negative interpretation. And again, it can be a very destructive one, but when you remove it, it does more to strengthen your marriage than adding 5 positives. That's very good.
So we've got 3 of them down. Yeah. We've got one more to go.
Let's talk about something else right now. I don't want to talk about this.
The fourth one is called...
Let's not talk about it, because we're talking about
and
so
we
much
are
negative.
Going to talk about it. It's called avoidance and withdrawal. Whether you like it or not, right? Avoidance and withdrawal is when one partner withdraws from a conversation about difficult issues. And they do it either by leaving the room, or by clamming up, just getting quiet, or by getting loud. You know, sometimes we don't think about withdrawing by exploding, but if you explode, you have effectively cut off the conversation, right? So whatever way you find
you could agree too quickly. You're right. I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. Whatever. I'm sorry. Let's not talk about it.
That's a withdrawal, right? Whatever causes you not to deal with the issue. Now, the withdrawer gets out of it. The avoider... You know, the avoider is even more adept because it's like they have this sixth sense that says, I think they may be wanting to talk about something I really don't want to discuss. And so they stay late at work, or they find some way to just never, you know, never get alone with you. Whatever.
That's kind of tough when you're married.
Yeah,
you know?
It's hard. But some people do it. Whatever will keep me from having to talk about the difficult issues. It's very, very destructive.
And it might look something like this. Here we go.
Joey that he can build a ramp for his bike so he can do tricks?
Please, please not now.
Painful, isn't it? So what's the damage? What's the damage if we don't talk about those things that become issues between us? Number one, it leaves them unsolved, and they tend to grow bigger and bigger. And, you know, something that's very small can stack right here, and then you stack another small thing on top of it and another small thing, and pretty soon you've got this wall that will separate you. And it will separate you, whether it's by divorce or whether it's simply by, you know, living parallel lives in the same house but not really being together, not really having the oneness or the intimacy that we wish we had in life. So it's very damaging if we always do that. It results in separation one way or the other.
That's right. And it's important to notice what's going on here with this. What's happening is basically the pursuer, the person who wants to get this thing settled, they're seeking intimacy. They want to find the intimacy that comes from resolving the conflict. They know there's a wall here. Let's tear the wall down. Let's build the intimacy because we're going to get rid of the negative. But the guy who's avoiding and withdrawing, this person is not. He wants the intimacy too, but basically he's looking for peace. They want peace. And so he views this wanting to talk about the issues as fighting. And so he withdraws, she avoids this, she views this, or whoever it is pursuing, as, you know, you don't even care. You don't care enough to talk about it. And so they get panicked. And the more she gets panicked, or whoever it is pursuing gets panicked, the more they pursue, the more trapped the other person, the withdrawer or the avoider, feels. And then the stronger that they avoid or withdraw, and they just keep chasing each other, right? You just got this chase going on, and it doesn't
help.
So
what about you? When you look at yourself, how many of you feel like, okay, I'm more the pursuer in a relationship?
I want to see a hand. True confession time. Okay. Who are the pursuers here?
You don't
have
to speak, but put your hand up if you think you're more the pursuer.
All right,
we
got some pursuers over here.
How many people are more the withdrawer?
Withdrawers. Over here?
Okay.
How many of you go back and forth? You do one and then the other, depending on the issue. All right, yeah.
Yeah. And I think probably we all fit into that, right? Sometimes we really want to pursue it, and sometimes we don't, depending on what the issue is. I tend to sometimes be the withdrawer.
Do you tend
to?
Yeah, I do. From time to time?
I do, from time to time.
That's all right. I hadn't noticed that. I don't know.
It's like, I'm kind of like he is. It's like, let's just be happy. Can't we all be happy? But it doesn't always work that way. And when it gets to be a tough issue for me, I just get quiet.
The lips get thin.
Just get quiet, get closed. Now, there are other times when I am the pursuer. We need to fix this. We need to talk about it.
It's so late right now. Can we do this another time?
You know, sometimes the reason that a withdrawer is a withdrawer is because they feel like they may not have the skills to keep up if they get blindsided by an issue. That's the way it is with me. Mike is, you know, he's always got the quick words, the quick wit. He can, you know, if we get into it right off the bat, he can just, you know, and I'm just in a heap down on the floor and I'm done, you know, because I cannot keep up. I'm not quick-witted and quick-tongued, and, you know, we didn't do that in our house growing up, and he did.
I'm practiced.
He knows.
Hello.
But if I have time to think about it.
Then I'm dead meat.
To consider it. Then I have my arguments all lined up.
She's very logical and very thorough.
But we don't want to be blindsided, and so it's important, if you are the pursuer, how do we solve this thing? If you're the pursuer, agree to pursue more gently. Don't blindside the person. That's why it's helpful, like we'll talk about tomorrow, to set a time to talk about problems so that I know that I'm not just, you know, fair game at any moment,
right,
that something's going to come down on me. I'm going to have time to consider it, think about it, and we'll discuss it.
And by the way, a good way to do that for the pursuer is to come to the withdrawer and say, "Sweetheart, we need to talk about X. When's a good time?" So in other words, this sends the message, right? We need to talk about this, but it doesn't have to be right now, all right? Now, it's not fair for the withdrawer to say, "We'll talk about it the second Tuesday of next week." Because as you know, that never happens. So you have to set the appointment within the next 24 to 48 hours. 48 at the long side, but usually within the next 24 hours, and then keep the appointment.
That's right. If you're the withdrawer, you have to commit to actually discuss whatever issues exist in your marriage. They may be very small, they may be big, but you cannot withdraw. You have to agree, all right, for the sake of our oneness, I'm going to agree to discuss these things.
And you may do it in small doses. And again, we will give you skills for how to do that, even setting time limits for the discussion so it doesn't take all night. And we'll give you skills on how to make that happen without hurting each other, without trapping one another.
So those are the four patterns.
Yeah, but also it's important to set aside time to do that, okay. As we mentioned, and protect that time from conflict. So, I mean, when you do this, when you have the appointment, you basically tell the kids, do not interrupt us unless one of you stops breathing or the house catches on fire. So you take the phone off the hook, you protect the time from conflict, and then also you make the time productive by learning the skills that we're going to teach you in problem solving tomorrow afternoon.
Okay. So those are the four negative communication patterns. Have you ever seen them, ever experienced them? You know, I think if you're human, you probably,
Yeah, you've never seen that at all.
No,
none of those.
If you're human and you grew up in a family, you've probably seen some of it somewhere.
And tomorrow we'll start the seminar on denial.
Well, the research says that there are two major risks to marital oneness. And these risks will tear you apart. The first one is high conflict. And you notice that high conflict is present in escalation, in invalidation, and in negative interpretation. The Bible talks about it. Proverbs 29 says, a fool gives vent to anger, but the wise quietly hold it back. You know, someone asked, well, when do I get to tell him off? Well, you don't.
Never.
That's not part of it. Proverbs 12 says, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing.
That's nice, isn't it?
So high conflict is one of the two risks in marriage, and the other is avoidance. And we just talked about it in avoidance and withdrawal. Ephesians 4 talks about that. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to his neighbor, for we are all members of one body. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. Sometimes we give him a foothold so easily, and he doesn't deserve it, not in our homes, because we need to be committed to having the home that God intended for us to have. And then the joy comes with it.
So what we'd like for you to do tonight as we begin to close off this session this evening is take a few minutes just to talk. The first thing that we'd like to do is to discuss the communication patterns that you find in your marriage. Do you have any of these four? Do you have all four? That's an interesting home. Do you have them in small measure, in large measure? What is your home like? Can you spot any of these patterns, even to a small degree, in your home? That's the first thing to do. So identify those negative communication patterns. And then commit as a team to work to solve those.
That's right. Tonight, you know, you're not going to solve it all tonight. But what we want you to do is, first of all, identify, and then just make a commitment. You know, because we want the oneness that God desires for us, because we want to be close together, we're going to commit to getting rid of any of these that exist. So we're going to take a few minutes right now.
Take some time to talk about that together, and then we'll come back to close off. All right. We hope you've had at least an opportunity to discuss whether or not you think you do these things. And you've been able to identify that. But no or?
Nah. No, never done that. Nah.
You also see that these principles are not just good for those of you who are married, but also for singles, because these involve any relationship you're in, engaged couples. In fact, I teach these when I do premarital counseling and encourage the couples to examine in our dating and our engagement time, have we exhibited any of these? In fact, I remember one couple that was in my office, and they admittedly exhibited all four negative communication patterns in their dating life, and in large measure, and I begged them not to get married. I said, at least until you fix these. You've either got to fix these or don't get married. And they left the office in a very somber mood. They went out to eat after that, and they broke up. The young lady sent me an email. She said, this is painful, but it was the right thing to do. If I ever find another one, I'm bringing him back to you. So, you know, it is helpful for singles and for engaged as well as for married
and
couples.
And by the way, both of those two are married now to other people, and They have both said, you know, this other relationship is way better.
Yeah.
Because they took time to look at this ahead of time.
That's right. Now, I'd like to, before we dismiss tonight, how many of you are members of this congregation? Can I see your hands? That's great. How
Wonderful.
Many of you are visitors here? Can I see your hands if you're visiting?
Wonderful.
That's cool.
Yay.
That's great. Well, we're glad to see all of you here this evening.
And we want to let you know about tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, the first session will be right here in the sanctuary at 9:30. So we hope to see you here at 9:30 tomorrow morning. At 11 o'clock, there is a worship service here, and everyone is invited. It's not a one of the seminar sessions. And so it is an optional thing in terms of the Mad About Marriage, but you are absolutely invited to come. We hope you will join
us. I'll be speaking, and it'll be a sermon of general interest, I think, for everyone, but we'd love to see you all here.
After that worship service, there will be a lunch provided for everyone that's participating. It'll be a potluck for those that are members of the congregation. If you're a guest, just come as a guest. And then at 2:30, is that right, Pastor? 2:30, we will begin the afternoon sessions, and we'll go till about 6 or something.
About 6
like
or so,
that.
Yeah. Or yeah. If I get long-winded, who knows?
And we'll have breaks, and, you know, you'll be able to get a drink and stuff. We won't just keep you all afternoon.
That really wasn't a threat. We will end on time, all right?
Yeah. Yeah,
all right. I saw you sweating over here, man.
He's like, oh, no.
Okay. I wonder, Pastor, would you like to come and dismiss us with prayer this evening? Appreciate it. And thank you again for the invitation to be here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for being here tonight, everyone.
Did we enjoy this evening? Amen. What a way to start the Sabbath, and what a way to come together. I would like to invite you to stand as we finish with prayer. And tomorrow morning, again, we will see each other. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for the message that we heard tonight. Ways of how we can communicate better with each other. And I know you also have a hard time sometimes talking to us. Help us to listen. Help us to listen as we continue growing in our marriages, as we continue growing as a church family, as we continue to grow in our communities. And we thank you so much for all these tools that we heard tonight. As we go back home, give us travel mercy, and we thank you for the blessing received tonight. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. Amen. Thank you very much.